You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.
Hey everyone, this is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape. This is This Week in Cardiology for July 17th, 2015. This week I'm going to talk about the use of apixaban in some forms of valvular AF, the importance of comorbidities in treating heart failure, a reappraisal of PVCs as a potential target to prevent heart failure, and statins. First up is the issue of valvular AF and the use of new oral anticoagulants. There's a great debate in what constitutes valvular AF, and the reason why this is an important question is that the label on these drugs say only to use NOAC drugs when there is non-valvular AF. But what constitutes non-valvular AF? For instance, we know that in the Aristotle trial, patients with rheumatic valvular lesions and mechanical valves were excluded from the analysis. But what about more common valvular lesions like MR and AR and TR, or perhaps valvular heart surgery without mechanical valves? Well, a group of researchers from the Aristotle trial, they looked at their database and they found 4,800 patients who had some form of common valvular AF. They had 2,400 patients who got warfarin, 2,400 patients who got apixaban. They did an analysis and they published this analysis in Circulation. They found, number one, that patients with valvular AF have higher risk. They're sicker patients with more strokes, more major bleeding, and higher mortality. Interestingly, they found that apixaban compared favorably to warfarin in these patients. There was a solid non-inferiority in stroke, major bleeding, and mortality. But I'll remind you that in the main Aristotle trial, apixaban had a superiority advantage and a statistically significant mortality advantage. So that was lost in this analysis. I think this trial helps us a little. It gives us some reassuring feelings that apixaban is pretty equivalent to warfarin in these patients. But on the other hand, it's concerning that apixaban lost its superiority advantage. I look forward to more studies on this important topic. There's a ton of patients with common valvular lesions. Next up, I wanted to mention the importance of thinking about non-cardiac comorbidities in patients with heart failure. If only patients with heart failure had isolated systolic LV dysfunction, we'd have a much easier time. That's unfortunately not the case. A recent analysis from the cardiovascular health study, which was published in JACC Heart Failure, found, listen to this, that 60% of elderly heart failure patients had significant comorbidities such as functional and cognitive decline. This was a 12-year follow-up study of more than 550 elderly heart failure patients, mean age 79. The main finding was that in a multivariate analysis looking at mortality, non-cardiac conditions like chronic kidney disease, diabetes, CVA, and depression strongly predicted mortality. But guess what didn't predict mortality? Hypertension and coronary artery disease. I mentioned this study because of the valsartan-sacubitril combination pill that's going to come up. At least in this cohort of elderly patients, it really emphasizes the importance of considering non-cardiac conditions in our patients. And this should give cardiologists and doctors pause about micromanaging heart medicines and increase the awareness of conditions in our elderly patients, such as pill burden and fall risk and functional capacity and cognitive capacity. Next up, I wanted to mention an important study about rethinking PVCs as a potential target for preventing heart failure. We've all seen the scenario of the Holter monitor with thousands of PVCs. The patient may have a normal ejection fraction, no structural heart disease, but all those PVCs make us worry. So a group of investigators from San Francisco, again, harnessed the database of the cardiovascular health study to look at this very question. They published their study as the lead article in JACC last week. Again, a warning sign that the methods in the statistical analysis section was many paragraphs long. But they found 1,100 subjects who were older than the age of 65, had no heart failure, normal ejection fraction, and they had a Holter monitor to analyze. The major finding was that there was a significant association of PVC burden with future decrease in EF. The researchers split the cohort into quartiles of PVC burden and found that the highest quartile of PVC burden had the highest risk of future decrease in ejection fraction. But perhaps the most notable thing about this study was the editorial that it generated. Doctors Santaginelli and Marchlinsky from the famous EP lab at the University of Pennsylvania urged cardiologists to let go of their strongly held conviction that PVCs are not a modifiable target in heart failure. They said, and they argue, they want us to think about new techniques for PVC treatment, such as, and I'll quote, highly effective and low-risk PVC ablation. They argue that PVCs may not have been modifiable with flecainide and enkenide, but new techniques such as PVC ablation may be more effective. I've been thinking a lot about this topic. I'm actually working on a column on it, but right now I'll just add a couple things. One is that PVC ablation can indeed be easy and safe and effective, but it can be hard as hell and dangerous too. And another, a key question with PVCs turns on whether the patient is sick with PVCs or because of PVCs. And it's often the former. And I worry when influential electrophysiologists who have immense experience in ablation whip out excitement about complex procedures, I worry that we may see less than ideal decision making from less experienced centers. And I will admit, PVC ablation has been shown to be effective in a selected cohort of patients. I've done it. It's extremely gratifying when PVCs go away and ejection fraction comes up. But this issue is going to require more than just skills in the EP lab. It's going to require skills in decision-making about when to go to the EP lab. Finally, two studies published in JAMA this week on statins made news. In the first was an analysis of 2,400 patients from the Framingham trial, which of course were white, middle-aged subjects from Massachusetts. They looked at whether which guidelines were better, the old guidelines, which were target-oriented, or the new guidelines, which are risk-based. And they were comparing accuracy and efficiency of the two guidelines. And they found that statin eligibility using the new guidelines predicted statin eligibility in 39% of these patients versus only 14% using the old guidelines. And more importantly, statin-eligible subjects using the new guidelines had a hazard ratio of 6.8 for cardiovascular events versus only 3.1 in the old guidelines. Also, the new guidelines were more effective at predicting coronary artery calcium, and these accurate and efficiency models held up in intermediate-risk patients. Second study, Harvard researchers looked at cost-effectiveness of statin therapy using various 10-year risk estimates. And again, the methods section was intense and dense, and get this, they used a, quote, micro-simulation model to generate numbers on hypothetical patients. Not surprisingly, they found immense cost-efficiency benefits to using statins at the 7.5% 10-year risk threshold. And they even found lower thresholds, such as 4% risk, was cost effective. And again, not surprisingly, the research team extrapolated the computer simulations on hypothetical patients to show that thousands of humans treated with these drugs would suffer thousands fewer cardiac events. I'll start with a positive comment. The first is I like these studies because they help us jettison the idea of target-oriented statin decisions. This dogma is still holding strong in the real world where I work. I really like the risk-based model better, and I think these studies lend credence to using a risk-based statin decision model rather than targets. But I have more negative to say than positive. I find that so much of the statin conversation is dominated by public health arguments about population benefits. To me, the statin decision is not a population decision, but a patient decision. Patients really don't care what happens to populations. They care what happens to them. And this is where I disagree with the JAMA editorialist who sort of used these papers as a means to promote statins in primary prevention patients. And to me, maybe I'm wrong, but these studies don't really say anything about the benefits of whether statins will help a selected patient who sits in front of us. They don't, for instance, change the fact that there's no mortality benefit to statins in primary prevention. They don't change the fact that the NNT for cardiovascular events in primary prevention is greater than 100. So I worry about distraction. When leading researchers and journals continually promote pills and drugs for cardiovascular benefits, I worry about distracting the public. For me, it seems to say, or people may think that cardiologists and mainstream medicine is more interested in promoting pills than they are promoting a healthy lifestyle. Anyways, that I'll stop there. That's it for this week in cardiology. Until next week, this is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape.
You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.